Hello and welcome back to Compensation Uncovered, the series that lifts the lid on the world of personal injury claims. We're here to arm Australians with everything you need to know to make sure you claim all the financial compensation you're fairly entitled to under the law. Compensation Uncovered is brought to you by our team here at Law Partners, and we are Australia's largest specialist personal injury law firm. For episode two, I'm once again joined by two absolute industry experts, our senior lawyers, practice group leaders here at Law Partners, Shane Butcher and Lydia Wheatley. How are you guys doing today?
Great, thanks.
Fantastic, thanks, Piers.
Great, thanks for joining us. Now, our first series, as you all know, audience, is about the world of TPD, aka total and permanent disability claims. On our last episode, we covered a few sort of definitions and essentials just to get people started and understanding this topic. Go back and listen to episode one, folks, if you want to get up to speed. Today, we're going to delve a little deeper into the sort of types of illnesses and injuries that may or may not qualify for a TPD claim, and a little bit more about what the claims process can look like. I'd like to ask next about the sort of most common injuries or illnesses that either qualify, you know, for a TPD claim, or what are the sort of most common injuries or illnesses that you tend to see. Shane, if I can start with you, what sort of categories do they tend to fall into?
Look, I look at it a different way. I look at it from what stops people from working. You know, if the test is that they're unlikely to return to work for their occupation that they're qualified for, having regard to like their education, their training, their experience, then the answer must be anything's possible. It could be illness, cancer, something related to work, something related to a car accident, physical back injuries, shoulder injuries. Okay. It could be a combination of those injuries. It doesn't have to be one. It could be multiple. So the short answer is anything. But in terms of typical, what we see at Law Partners, usually it's related to a work injury or a motor accident injury where you see spinal injuries, shoulders, knees, that kind of stuff.
Quite serious.
But that's not the limit. I don't think anyone listening should think, oh, that's the most typical, so therefore that's not me. Any type of injury that you have that prevents you from returning to work is viable.
Makes sense then about these serious physical injuries, back injuries. And then thinking about other kinds of injuries, sort of like, you know, critical illnesses or chronic illnesses, such as multiple sclerosis or various autoimmune diseases. Is that something, Lydia, that you would also see would be able to qualify for a TPD claim as well?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, those illnesses qualify too. It could be things like, chronic heart disease. People can manage their symptoms and work with all of these symptoms for many years sometimes, but then it comes to a point where they're not able to work anymore, and that would be their data disablement. So, you know, just because somebody thinks that it doesn't have to be a catastrophic injury that you've had or a life-changing event on one day, it can be a combination of things over a course of time. But that can get a little bit tricky too about data disablement, the date of assessment, all that sort of stuff. So those sorts of people may need legal advice too.
Of course. So the key is it doesn't really matter what type of injury or illness. The key is that it has prevented you from returning to your job or to your work in terms of what you're qualified for and your education, training, experience. That's the key.
That's correct. And once you meet the definition, then you're entitled to the benefit.
For our viewers and our audience, what can they expect as far as the TPD claims process goes? Like, what are the steps along the process? How long might it take? That kind of thing. Shane, I'll start.
Yeah, well, if you're a client of Law Partners, it should be very smooth.
Of course.
Right? But if you want to peek behind the curtain and see what kind of work is going on to get from point A to point B, touching on what Lydia said earlier, you sort of have to get all the documents and get the policy and make sure that you are covered, that you're likely to meet the definition. And then we spoke earlier about a waiting period. And that's that period where you have to be off work before you're eligible to make the claim. So it might be off work for 6 months and unlikely to return to work. So once that 6 month period is up, you know, we're getting ready to lodge and prepare paperwork and evidence and submissions as to why you meet that definition.
So that might be a minimum 3 or 6 months that you need to wait. Is there some sort of maximum period? Like say I've been unable to work for 6 or 7 years, but I haven't sort of bothered to look at my TPD rights and entitlements. Is that something? Is there a maximum around that or
not? No, that just strengthens the case. If you've been off work for 7 years, then you're more likely to be able to convince someone that you are unlikely to return to work because you've had such a long history of not returning to work. Mm-hmm. But just because you've got past that 3 month or 6 month mark, you still have to go and gather the evidence. Doctors are unlikely to provide support earlier in that period to say you're unlikely to return to work. So if you ask someone 1 week after injury, am I unlikely to return to work ever? The answer you're going to get is it's too soon to know. So we, you know, there's sometimes a period where you've got to wait for the condition to stabilize. Even though you've passed that initial 3 to 6 months, you might not be able to get the evidence you need to support your claim until later. It just depends on what you're suffering from, the injury you're going through.
Okay.
And once you've lodged it, it then shifts over to the fund and the insurer to evaluate the claim. Now, unlike most types of compensation we do at law partners, there's no TPD Act. There's no legislation that says the insurer must decide your claim within a particular time frame. You know, they have to decide it within a reasonable time frame. That's the words the courts have used.
Mm.
And for some cases, that might be 6 months. Some cases might be a bit less, a bit more. But typically, we say 6 months is a reasonable time for an insurer to determine and evaluate your claim.
Depends on your definition of reasonable, I suppose.
Well, that's what lawyers get paid to argue about in court sometimes, right?
Makes sense.
So once they've made a decision, and there's all sorts of things that can happen. If they might want to get you assessed by their doctor, they might have some questions. Mm. If they've got some doubt about the claim, they might issue a letter that says, look, we're considering declining this claim, and give you an opportunity to respond, or give your lawyers an opportunity to respond to the doubts they have about whether you meet the definition.
I see. And for you, Lydia, is that a similar experience as far as these processes go, that the typical lengths that it takes for claims to be approved? What's been your experience there?
Yeah, that's correct. I think the insurance company sometimes will refer to or feel that it's 6 months from the time that they have everything that they need. And sometimes they'll push the limits a little bit of that and look for something else and look for something else. That's why it's so important to get all the material at the beginning and submit it and say, now you've got everything that you need to evaluate this claim. And really, it's 6 months from that maximum is what I would say.
I see. Is it almost one of those cases of your best shot is your first shot, and it's about getting your...
It's a front-loaded gun, Piers. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. That's right. As well, we've talked about, you know, what does the process look like? I mean, it's not always... They're going to be denied, then it's going to take a little bit longer, obviously. I mean, we would go through complaints processes, and as Shane touched on earlier on, procedural fairness letters are issued by the funds and insurers. It gives us a chance to do some more submissions to clarify things like timelines or medical evidence as well. But generally, if an insurance company or a fund declines a claim, we'd go through a lot of different processes, and not till it's really denied twice by them would we have a look. And then we would even maybe brief a barrister, get some advice about potential litigation. If we think that people have good prospects of having the decline reversed by lodging a statement of claim in the Supreme Court, we'll do that for our clients too.
Excellent. It sounds like there are, you know, a lot of variables, but there are some sort of approaches that we can take to streamline as we get claims approved.
We'll push it as far as we think there's reasonable prospects of success. And of course, with our clients' instructions, you know, if that's not something they want to do, that's completely fine. But if there is a declined claim, we have a very, very close look at that for them.
One thing that I came across, you know, researching for this episode is that it's sometimes possible, or perhaps I'll ask you guys, whether you can have multiple policies and you can claim TPD payouts from multiple super funds. Lydia, start with you. Is that something that you can do?
Oh, absolutely, Piers, yes. I mean, people have several superannuation funds sometimes if they've moved across different jobs, and or even you can have a superannuation fund that has a policy of TPD attached to it. You may have taken out some life insurance with your broker and they asked you if you wanted TPD, and you could have had a retail policy as well. So there's all different forms you can have policies. So if you are meeting the definitions under the various policies, they might be different for each one, you can actually make a claim against each one for sure. I think one guy actually had... five policies once. That was the most I've ever seen. But one story I actually do remember was a lady. She was a retail manager and she had multiple sclerosis and couldn't work anymore. She had children. I think she was actually even a single mother. It was quite a sad case. Mm. But she had four policies because she'd moved around different stores, you see. And she was able to claim on each of those policies, and it was over $1 million. So it was really great for her
great
and her
outcome.
Family.
Yeah.
It's one of those circumstances where maybe being less organized has helped people get more compensation. But something you said earlier, where you've got multiple policies, might have multiple definitions, is really true. Just because you succeed on one doesn't necessarily mean you're going to succeed on all of them. Mm. Different definitions will be applied differently to a similar set of facts.
So you might have five policies, but you qualify on three of them or something like that.
Correct. Yeah. You could qualify for all of them. Mm. You might get two out of three, one out of three. Different. If you're relying on multiple injuries, they might have occurred at different times. So some of them were pre-existing conditions to the other ones. There's all sorts of complexities. Good idea to get advice, because working through it all to make sure you're giving yourself the best chance of succeeding in all claims is obviously what you want to do.
I see.
And sometimes you want to leverage the approval of one policy to try and make submissions to the second and third and say, this fund has approved my claim. You also should approve my claim. So, you know, there's some tactics behind it that you want to sort of take advantage of.
Oh, I like that. And just to pick up on something you indicated before about being organized versus being unorganized, is this an example where, you know, sometimes if you do roll over, you know, various super accounts into one, you might then only have one DPD policy as opposed to having several, and it might be better to have a few older policies lying around?
It really depends on what you do. I was sort of making a joke that financial advisors might tell you to roll it into one, but two policies worth $100,000 is the same as one policy worth $200,000.
That's fair.
So depending on what you're doing, how you're doing it, it will be the circumstances you find yourself in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Lydia, Shane, thank you so much for your time today. Your insights are really helpful. I'm sure our audience will get a lot out of it. We look forward to speaking to you both soon about TPD claims for episode 2. And to you, our audience, thank you so much for listening. We really do appreciate your time, spending time with us here at Compensation Uncovered from Law Partners. To stay up to date, be sure to follow us on all your favorite social media platforms, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Just search for Law Partners there, or of course online at lawpartners.com.au. We'll be back before you know it to share more stories and more legal insights with you. Thanks again for listening. I'm your host, Piers Toomey, and goodbye for now.